B-Pod Studios.
Who is Milo's favorite player?
Tree Rollins.
Boston sports fans start their day with Tucker and Rich.
Oh, Fred, too much.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Tucker and Rich, and the AV Club, which is something that you can use to kill time while you sit home and you're done masturbating. But they have something, 19 bands that have plowed through three or more frontmen without a name change. Would anyone care to guess some bands that are on this thing?
Van Halen.
Yeah, Van Halen, yes.
That's an easy one. Three or more singers without a name change. Priest only had two. Let's go with... Journey. That's right.
Journey, absolutely. Journey has had Greg Rowley.
Rowley.
Yeah. All right, shut up.
He was Robert the that way, a guy who got his ass kicked out of the band when Steve Perry went and did sang side by side. That
Robert
was one of the old-time
Fleischman, Steve Perry, Steve Aguri.
Aw, Jerry, yeah.
All right, shut up. Jeff Scott Soto and Arnel Pineda.
Yes.
Yes, okay, so you have two of the 19.
Okay. INXS.
INXS, absolutely, is one. Wow. The INXS.
Terrence Trent D'Arby, by the way, the singer for like a second, I think.
Really?
Let me see if they name him. No. They
yeah,
do not
he was
him.
For like a well, minute.
I want in on this for a second, if I could.
Yes.
Stone Temple Pilots.
Yes, Stone Temple Pilots is one. So we've gone three. By the way, Chester Benningham doing a solid job as a singer of that band, as I look
I saw
at
them
this.
Live with him. It was actually a pretty good show.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a famous singer. Yeah, Scott Weil and Chester Benningham, Bennington, I'm sorry. And then a million people. So they have had that, yes. Any other guesses?
The Misfits?
No.
No, they only had two, right? Okay.
Fred, what about the band Queen?
Queen is two singers, so no, that would not be on there.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, I have a friend of mine who's texting me, and he did it in capital letters, so I should have known. He insists AC/DC.
AC/DC, indeed, with numerous singers.
Axl Rose, I forgot. Because I could only think of Bon Scott and Brian Johnson, but
no, they're far more than that. They are number one on this list.
Wow.
As they have Dave Evans, Bon Scott, Brian Johnson, and then a bunch of other people. Because if they use a question mark, it's that they're not overly they're not certain of who the singer is of the band.
Well, I'm a poser because I only knew three of those, so I have no idea. No idea those other people even existed.
All right.
Let me think.
Yeah, you are a poser, stupid poser.
Motley Crue only had two. John Corabi.
You always got to go to the crew.
Mm-hmm. Hooligans Holiday.
I have another guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Chicago.
Chicago has several.
Nice.
Robert Lamb, Terry Kath, Peter Cetera, Bill Champlin, Jason Scheff, Lou Pardini.
There's Cetera and no one else. And Cetera just went on and just said, you guys make your stupid horn music. I'll do Gloria Love from the Karate Kid soundtrack.
It's funny because if you look at Chicago, you would think that they suck. And then if you go back into their career,
you're like,
they were kind of funk.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of brought the funk.
Like 25 or 6-4 is all right when that comes on. You're like, dude, like that's an
all right song.
All
right. Think punk rock.
Oh, okay. Let's go with Black Flag.
Yes, Black Flag, Keith Morris, Ron Reyes, Dez Cadenza, Henry Brooke Rollins, Dana, Mike Vallely. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Now think of one-hit wonder fight movie.
Fight movie? Okay.
Yes.
If there's a fight movie, now are we talking, is this like 80s fight movie?
No, Rich, it's 2000. No, yes, it's an 80s fight movie.
Okay, then who did the soundtrack for Bloodsport? Lion. Lion.
You're
all right,
Lion.
I got it.
Lion's had several, yes.
All right, Survivor, Fred.
Yes.
All right, good one.
Strangely enough, Dave Bickler, Jimmy Jameson, which is, I'm sure, his real name, Ron McCauley, and Cameron Barton.
Yeah,
all singers for the band Survivor.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, Survivor band.
Okay, now think Hesher, 70s Hesher.
70s.
If you watched that metal show, you would be very experienced in this. like a quasi-metal band from the 70s that you don't think about that much.
Except Udo Dirkschneider, or whatever that guy's name was.
Except is only Udo. If they don't have Udo, it's not Except.
You got your balls to the wall.
It's one of the best Beavis and Butthead moments when they watch that video. Man, I don't know. Who?
One of the singers went on to be in Whitesnake.
Oh, Deep Purple.
That's right. Rod Evans, okay. Ian Gillan, David Coverdale, and Jolynn Turner.
Uh-huh.
All right. Any other guesses? Okay. Speed metal, famous speed metal band. Bottom of the when the 80s speed metal bands get together, they're always the first band to come out.
Like Exodus or something like that?
No. More popular.
Okay. Anthrax. John Corabi.
John Connolly, Dirk Kennedy, Jason Rosenfeld. There's nothing that screams metal like Jason Rosenfeld. Neil Turbin, Matt Fallon, Joey Belladonna, John Bush, and Dan Nelson.
John Bush, not Corabi. That's right. He's Molly Crew. Yeah, that's, of course.
Okay. There's a band, Discharge, you'll never get.
Anthrax is a good band. I mean, they're a good band.
Well, like, when John Corabi was the singer, that was the best they were.
You mean John Bush?
Joey,
when they did Only and stuff like that, like the later years.
Well, Only's their best song.
You see, you get State of Euphoria with like Be All End All and Antisocial, like that album.
Antisocial is a cover. By the way,
Antisocial is a cover?
Or the Got the Time Tick 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 in My Head. Antisocial is a cover, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But Joey Belladonna could not sing.
Didn't matter. He was more of a rapper kind of. Like, he would just like rant.
Yeah, he was not a good singer at all.
Okay,
massive band. Massive band. Lots of internal strife.
Oh, man. Massive band. Lots of internal strife. Bigger than Journey?
Dan, do you want to say it on the air?
Oh, sure. For the internal strife, the first thing that came to my mind was the band Fleetwood Mac.
Okay. Peter Green, Jeremy Spencer, Danny Kerwin, Bob Welch, Christine McVie, Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks, Rick Vito.
Oh, that's not fair. That's like saying the Eagles have more than three singers. Like, there are people in the band who all sang.
Well, Rich, Rick Vito, Billy
Burnett.
I don't know who Rick Vito is. Becca Bramlett. I mean, these are not things that one would know off the top of their head. All right.
Did Genesis have anybody besides Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins?
No, Genesis is not on this. No. All right. Think of an iconic metal band.
Iconic metal band.
This is pretty cool. Because there is someone. No. Iconic metal band. The top five metal bands of all time.
As I said, it's not Priest. It's not obviously not Metallica. It's not Slayer.
Iconic.
Yeah, those are iconic metal bands. Those are
as
iconic
as it gets. Is another level of iconic.
It's not Maiden.
Maiden is one of these.
Oh, really? So
they had five singers.
Bruce Dickinson. I didn't know that.
Paul Day, Dennis Will. I didn't know either. I just thought it was Paul Donato and Bruce Dickinson. But Paul Day, Dennis Whitlock, Paul Di'Anno, Bruce Dickinson, and Blaze Bailey.
Blaze Bailey.
That's because he blazes. Okay, I will end this exercise soon, but iconic. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 singers.
Whoa, iconic metal band. More iconic than Slayer?
Far more iconic.
Whoa.
Some would say they created the genre.
Oh, Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath, you're right.
Ozzy Osbourne, Dave Walker, Ronnie James Dio,
of course. How did I forget Black Sabbath? Yep.
Ron Keel.
Yeah.
From Keel, at one point, a singer. Dave Donato, Glenn Hughes, Ray Gillian, and Tony Martini. Now, I will end this exercise for you people right now, and I'll tell you the band that was from the out of the ashes, the Descendants, was one, Deep Purple, In Excess.
Yep.
You got Survivor, Black Flag, you got Chicago, you got Gwar, which I'm surprised you didn't get.
What are the names of their singers? Read them, because they're always great.
The Johnny and Joey Slutman, Odorous Urungus, Volvatron, and Blothar.
Yep, the names are the best.
That is the singers of Gwar. King Crimson, I'm surprised you didn't get that.
King Crimson's an all right band. Like, they're not bad.
What do I know about them? Yeah, all is bad. Dave Small is Dave Smalley, Scott Reynolds, and Chad Price.
You know what lead singer I don't think has gotten a fair shake, and I think he's excellent, is the new singer for Alice in Chains. Like, he's been their singer, you know, for like 20 years now, because Layne Staley's been dead.
But he doesn't even have to sing.
No, he's perfect.
And yeah, but not only barely has to sing. Well, I mean, what's his face sings all the stuff.
He does, but I mean, there's songs like "Man in the Box" where you got to hit those notes that Layne used to hit, and that's
Can
Layne.
You show
that's Jerry. See, Layne hits the high notes in that song. So not only does he do that, but like, he doesn't try to be Layne Staley on like the new stuff, and it's excellent, and his voice mixes perfect with Jerry Cantrell, and they've made really good albums since Layne Staley's been dead. Like, that's one band that I don't think got a fair enough shake when they ended up getting a new singer, because Layne was obviously so iconic, not to overuse that word.
Well, you didn't get AC/DC and know the 10-month run of Dave Evans.
I can't believe I missed that one. I'm a poser.
I mean, Dave Evans, before Bon Scott joined the band, the classic Dave Evans years. I was just excited because they put All in it. So I was very excited about that.
Where did the Jump in the Saddle band go? Because I know that they've gone through another one.
Rich, they were solid as a rock. When they lost their bassist, they were like, we're done. It was like when Zeppelin lost their drummer.
Because they did have one singer that I think we're all fairly close to. You know, maybe someone who might even be on the show, possibly.
When me and my friends go out on the town, we can't sit still, we can't sit down. We don't like to fight and we don't like to scuffle. Dancing all night and doing the curly shuffle. Hey Mo, hey Mo.
He could have sung for that band.
Oh, sure, you fit right in.
What the hell were they thinking when they made this song?
Well, we never miss a chance. We get up and dance to do the curly shuffle.
To the Jumping Saddle Band.
I'll have you know I did that without lyrics in front of me. Thank you.
I know you did. I know you did. I was here. I was very proud of you. Very proud of you. You know what? You know how you fiddle with stuff?
How's that?
You know, like when you're like on the air, you might fiddle with something?
Yeah.
Like, Rich, you're always scratching your balls and things?
All the time.
I lay out my baseball cards so I can look at them. I'm slowly losing my mind.
Actually, I shouldn't laugh. I was just doing that before the show, so I can't laugh all
like,
that much.
Like I have a desk technically at home, but I'm never on it. So, like, I have a very special 10-year anniversary plaque from CBS Radio prominently displayed. So I can look at that and go, you know what, Fred? You did all right. You spent 10 years at the same company. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Tutcher and Rich, 98.5 Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boston sports fans start their day with Tutcher and Rich.
There's a disagreement here in studio.
How unusual.
I'll tell you what, it's what makes us different that makes us great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
That might be lost on some people. Again, I'm being sarcastic when I say what makes us different makes us great. I don't know if that resonates in that bumper. All right, Rich.
Mike and Mike thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but not in context. It doesn't sound like that. It's a self-deprecating thing. But go ahead, Rich. What do we got here?
Well, one thing that's been pretty refreshing where baseball – we talked about baseball.
I'm watching the –
Korean baseball.
I'm watching Korean baseball, and they had a lady on whose husband's over there. He's playing over there. She's one of these American ladies whose husband's playing over there in Korea.
How much do they make, like, in the Korean Baseball League? If there was a guy who, you know, you hear about this happening all the time, you know, people going over to either Korea or even China, like, how much would a guy make if he had, if he went from America to play in the Korean Baseball League? Do you know how much they make?
$4.25 an hour.
Because I've always heard that it's actually decent money if you, you go there and you play.
Okay, I'm sure it's fine. I think it's just to stay in the game, and it's all they know.
Yeah. I would
apparently,
think so.
It's somewhere between double and triple A if you want to compare it to.
Oh, that's it? Oh, I see. I thought it was more. Okay, well, that's not much at all.
Well, double A, you've got to live on people's floors.
For instance, one of the pitchers for one of the teams that's playing today is making $1.5 million.
Well, that's not bad. I mean,
that's not double A money.
Yeah, double A.
No,
money
that's
is like,
it's a little better. He's considered high end though, from what I understand.
Yeah, because double A money, unless you're if you read the bullpen gospels by the fellow we have on from time to time,
Dirk Hayhurst.
Thank you. There was a. Who was the big Padres? And he went to the Mets. He was the third baseman, John. Chase Headley.
He played for the Yankees, too, yeah.
Yeah. He was a bonus baby in the organization. So they were, like, having to have summer jobs or have winter jobs. And, like, Hayhurst was staying on someone's floor. And then Headley came in, and he was making, like, 1.5. So, there's a big discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots in that league.
Well, I mean, it's the as I said, the production's been good, and you know, the fact that they're playing is fine, and obviously, I said that the weird faces that they've got of people who have purchased the right to have their face put on a cardboard cutout in the stands, I think, is something that the Red Sox will definitely do to make money. And as I said, I want an entire stand full of John Wallachs if that happens at the beginning of the season. But one thing that the NFL has done is they've so far, and I guess it's because they're able to because their season doesn't start for a while, but they've handled things pretty well. Whereas Red Sox ticket holders had to wait a month and a half to find out what the hell was going to happen to their value of their tickets for these unplayed games. The NFL yesterday straight up advised teams that they must offer fans both full refund or credit if the games they pay for are played without fans. Do you see how easy that was?
It's common sense. I don't get that at all.
We don't play them, you don't pay for it.
Yeah.
If you can't
go. That's how it works. Right.
Yeah, we're not going to hold your money hostage and make you have to use this for like a credit later on or something ridiculous. They just said if the games are not going to have fans, you're getting your money back. That is as easy as it gets. On the other hand, you've had the NHL kind of milling around waiting for someone else to tell them what to do, but I guess any semblance of a plan is a good thing right now. Darren Dreger yesterday, he was on TSN, and he talked about NHL's proposed Phase 2 starting date.
Well, the NHL is hopeful, James, that they'll be able to initiate Phase 2 in later May. But that's all subject to a review, and it is too early to start the review process. The NHL, though, guys, is encouraged by the markets that are loosening up, but they're cautiously optimistic and monitoring carefully to see if there will be any setbacks. The motto is simply better safe than sorry. Phase 2, though, can't really get started until the large majority of the NHL teams are able to open up, and that means players coming back. But here's an interesting twist to all of that. Even though the majority of clubs may be able to open up, unless they can all open up at the same time or around the same time, the NHL isn't going to allow players to go to their club facility again, until the majority are able to do that.
This sucks because nothing the NHL has been saying has given me any confidence that they're coming back, and it's the sport that I want the most. It's like the one that has the least amount of a plan. It's the one that seems to be just milling around waiting for somebody else to do something first, and the one that you couldn't just like rip through games. You have to have breaks, and this is going to extend for a while now. It pisses me off because, I mean, I love hearing the way the NFL talks. You know, they've got all of they've got plans, contingency plans. Even like the NBA, there's 15 different things that they've got in the pipe ready to go as soon as somebody says it's all right for them to. Although I heard that Disney World plan, that somebody wrote a really good, you guys, you know how the NBA has been discussing possibly doing the playoffs at Disney World because they can have their own bubble. I read this pretty good article that we might get into later on that just blows that theory apart. And it's all about, like, I mean, dude, what if somebody, like, gets sick? Like, is Disney World accountable? Disney's going through their own problems right now. Yeah. Do you really want to think they want to take this on in the middle? Like, what benefit is it to Disney to take the risk of starting a baseball or a basketball league up where there's potential that someone might get sick and there's end up being bad publicity?
There's also
all the help they can get right now.
There's also something a little different. I mean, the NHL wants to uniformly let teams go back at the same time. The NBA is a little different. I mean, the NBA is like, okay, you know, if your state relaxes its regulations, feel free to have four players at a time work out. And like, or the Orlando Magic, the Miami Heat. You know, as of this Friday, technically they can go back. Meanwhile, the Celtics can't.
Yeah, I think that I truly mean this. I think the lack of a plan by the NHL is actually a good thing. I think that they're just going to pop up and go, all right, let's go.
And then what? Like that's the thing. It's like, and then what do they do?
I don't know. I don't listen. That's above my pay grade. But I think that they're just like kind of like hanging out in the bushes, like, you know, going, and then we're going to pop up and go, all right, here we go. I really do. I think that the NHL will play. I think that the NHL and the NBA will play. Because I'm more confident of that than I am of baseball being played in the Northeast. So,
but it will be played. Like
it will be played. But yeah. Their plan seems a little unrealistic in terms of they want to play, you know, the majority of the games, you know, teams in their home stadiums and that. But I mean, if they wanted to, here's the thing: if they want to play basketball and hockey, they could do it now. They could do it now if they wanted to. I mean, they just have to go to one of these places that are opened up. Now, I understand why they're not doing that, obviously, but because there are they're not going to want to do it, but there are states. It depends how much you want to get paid. There are states where you could play now. Not Florida and Texas either. Like, dude, have you seen the numbers? There's states where there's like eight people with coronavirus. So like you could play in those areas, but
you know what that sounds like? It almost sounds like the big league version of Fight Island.
Yes.
You know, Dana White was, by the way, he is like all jacked on that term Fight Island. Like he wants it to happen. Like even when, you know, all sports are being played, and now he wants Conor McGregor to be at Fight Island and all that. I mean, it's going to be very strange. Conor McGregor, I don't think, would ever do that. As a matter of fact, I think he's been very vigilant.
The fight Island doesn't seem like a good idea.
But they talked about this Disney idea for the NBA, and they said that finishing the NBA season and postseason in a bubble city, even a meticulously planned one, could endanger thousands of workers if initiated too soon. They talked about April, like Disney World furloughed like all these employees. They said to care for 30 NBA teams, 15 players per roster, coaches, medical staff, trainers, officials, broadcast crews, and their families means recalling quite a few of them. Isolating a hotel or two full of guests is a hazard in itself, but that's before accounting for hotel concierges who have to interact with the guests, maids who have to clean where others left, breathes, lounge, bathes, and all of this. So, I mean, it's one thing to just say, oh, we'll stay quarantined. But you have to think of the mass amount of people that it takes to make this whole thing run, especially when they're all staying there.
Well, you know, hotels are, a lot of hotels are open. So that's happening. I mean, they are. I mean, the hotel here in Newton's open. Our big hotel, the right side of the town, at borderline.
Is that the one that goes over the highway?
Yes, that is open. I can assure you of that.
Isn't that both sides of town? Isn't that the divider right there?
That is the divider. You can only stay on the right side of it.
Pick a sign, will you? Come on.
It's across from Buffs. Buffs is like kind of the line between the haves and the have-nots.
Yep.
But, I mean, you can stay in a hotel. I mean, I think a lot of the hotels, because I was going to go to Rhode Island this weekend if I wasn't going to Tennessee, just to see what was doing. And I know the hotels there are open. So, I mean, you could stay in a hotel. What do they call it, the summer league? Like, in the summer league, like, I guess you could run it like the summer league, and it doesn't seem like there's you know, I don't think you're going to get the production quality that you would get from a normal NBA game.
Well, you're forgetting the one thing, the one factor in all of this, and that's the name Disney. Disney does not want to put themselves in a position
I understand
where
that.
Anyone has their name next to catches coronavirus at a Disney hotel.
I understand.
So they need to keep their image squeaky clean. So that's the biggest part. You do it in Vegas. It's like, all right, well, it's Sin City. People are going to,
And also Vegas is just said.
Run by a maniac. So it's open for anything.
It's run by a legion.
Yeehaw! Yep. Yeah, so.
She wants to use them as a control group, she said.
They play college hockey at a high level in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where, like, five people have been in their lives. So, like, hockey could feasibly be played in the middle of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, think of, like, the schools, like, you know, Michigan Tech is in the Upper Peninsula where no one's ever been in their entire lives. They have their own language up there, and I'm not kidding. Minnesota Duluth and like these places that you could play, so they could go to areas that have been largely unaffected by the virus. Basketball is another story. I don't see you getting LeBron James to go up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and playing basketball games. I have faith that hockey will play. It's just they're going to have to get people on board. And this whole thing is that you would have to stay away from your family. I mean, there's no school. I mean, you could bring your family there. Where would you rather be, Rich, if you had to be out and about? The Upper Peninsula of Michigan or New York City? I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Hockey, the hotbeds are in, like, these hick towns. Put them in Medicine Hat. That's my thing for everything. Put them all in Medicine Hat. And there you go. That's where they will play. I do think hockey's going to play. I just don't think that there's any way that they play. I wouldn't send my team down to Florida, and I wouldn't say my opinion is evolving on this as it should. But I mean, I think that you could reasonably put it in a couple of these hotbeds that are untraditional, and I don't think that the players would have to be away from their families. I think that you could bring your family up there, and what is your family doing? Nothing. It's sitting around. So I mean, you can do school from there. I mean, my kids are going to be in school when we're in Tennessee, where I'm fleeing, Rich. Do you understand? I'm fleeing. Fleeing. Like a thief in the night. Unreasonably fleeing to Tennessee. All right. We will be back. We're going to talk to the mayor, Marty Walsh, where we will grill him on several policies that I'm unaware of. As I pay no attention to local politics. But we will talk to him about what's going on with the Rhone. And I don't think he has any intention of opening up the city soon, which is fine by me. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Toucher and Rich.
Good morning, guys. How's everyone today?
Oh, it's just a day after day of delight.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich, and there is uncertainty in the world, but we do know that two townies came into a press conference and stood and looked around and then left with last time we saw Mayor Walsh.
It's one of the best memes that's come out. The guy, the Bruins fan who walked up, and I didn't even think he realized there was going to be a press conference at that
There's
time.
One star because he looks like weird, and then the other guy looks like his guy who handles him. Mayor Marty Walsh from the great city of Boston. Mr. Walsh, hello, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
So did you see when those two dudes showed up when you were talking?
I had no idea until I went home. I think it was that night, and one of them had posted on Facebook. And he was talking about his time in the fame, his moment of glory, and I thought it was hilarious. I saw them walking around, but I didn't realize he kind of stumbled into the press conference. But it was great. It was a little fun during this this crazy pandemic time.
I just like that you're speaking, and then these two
what's going on
guys that don't seem to be employed. just walk in and check out the scene. But Mayor Walsh, I don't want you to be offended that they left 2 minutes after seeing you.
I guess I wasn't. I wasn't that interesting that day. They just kind of like, okay, we're out of here. Let's go.
All right. So let me start with this. So you have the ability, if Charlie Baker lifts some of these restrictions, you have the ability of the mayor of Boston of keeping your own restrictions. Is that correct?
In some cases, we can. It depends on really what it is. I think in the most cases here, hopefully everyone's on the same page across the Commonwealth. We don't want to be some of these other states where you're seeing governors and mayors arguing about everything. I think it's important to have the most consistent message you can for the public.
Okay, because you were on CNN. I'm sorry, Rich, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so to that point, how realistic do you think May 18th is looking to open things back up, or at least start opening things back up the way I know that you and Charlie Baker have been speaking? Looking at what you know now, does that seem like a realistic date? And what happens then if you do believe so?
You know, I think on the 18th, what's going to happen on the 18th is the governor's reopening committee is going to make a report back to the governor and to us and to a lot of people to really think about what industries, how we reopen. On the 18th, I don't think you'll see large scale reopenings, but you'll get an understanding of how we can do a phased approach to reopening the city of Boston. I think we still have to be very, very cognizant of the fact that these numbers are still going up. You know, we've had a little bit in the last 3 or 4 days in Boston, we've had a little bit of flattening. We still have 150, 160 people testing positive every day. The same in the Commonwealth, we're still at over 1,000. What we're watching is you watch the hospital beds capacity, you watch the emergency room capacity to make sure that in case there's a second kind of spike here, that the hospitals can handle any surge that might be coming in. And I think you can start, I mean, there's definitely conversations going on now around what industry can be kind of loosened up. You know, the flower shops are going to have deliveries starting this week. That's another industry that you're kind of slowly but surely opening up. And I think we have to be very careful of how we approach this. If we get a second curve, my concern is, as mayor, if we see this second spike, and the federal government said the other day that in June we could see a second major spike here, I'd prefer to open it up in the case that we can kind of ride through the spike by keeping the economy opening. I'm not sure if that's...
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Do we lose him?
I think we lost him.
Do you have olive oil in a bottle?
Lost him?
So you were talking about you want to get through the spike in June with the economy open, but you're a little hesitant.
If we can, and I think when we talk about reopening the economy now, we talk about the committee they're looking at. They're going to look at for all intents and purposes, if we go back to work, it's going to be very different. People are going to have to be tested. People that have tested positive coronavirus are going to have to self-isolate. You're going to have to do tracing of other folks who was around there and try and track the number back to how many people are affected by one person. So it's going to be a very different look and feel as we move forward here for the next probably 6-8 months.
Okay, so Mayor Walsh, what I'm understanding is that the 18th is going to be more of like a report on how Massachusetts plans on reopening rather than a solid date that it will reopen. Am I reading that right?
You're reading it right. And if you look at states that have opened up this last week that people are talking about, Georgia and Texas and other places, Florida, they haven't fully reopened. They've allowed some businesses to go from non-essential to essential, but they haven't gone back to the way it was prior to closing for coronavirus. So this is a slow process to keep people safe. So there'll be no day that you just flip the light on and everyone wakes up and goes to work that day. We will not see that day for a while.
Okay,
we will see people gradually going back.
Okay. But on the 18th, is this more of a day of information than it is of an opening? For instance,
I don't want to speak for the governor because that's the date that he gave for this committee. But I'm making assumptions here. My assumption is that there'll be potentially some businesses potentially opening on the 18th, but it won't be a full scale open.
That sucks because I'm going to be in Tennessee and I will have to come back sooner. I don't care for that. Can you
I don't
just
know what's going on down in Tennessee, so good luck down there. I'm not sure what's happening anywhere.
My parents, but well, I'm not going anywhere in Tennessee, believe me. What do I got to do there? But how about this? On the 18th, you set a plan where I don't have to be back until the 8th of June. Mayor Walsh, because our station is in Dorchester, that is my recommendation to you, is that you come out on the 18th and you say all business, the minor businesses, slow roll starting on the 8th of June. Could you do that for me?
That's something I could do for you, I think.
Thank you. I would very much enjoy that. I mean, I know I have a little pull around here as being one of the 10 most successful morning shows in Boston. I would imagine that you would want to stay on our good side. So that is what my advice would be to you. So I do
want to stay. I want to stay on the good side here of you guys. So let me see what I can do. Maybe I can, even if the governor doesn't open things up, maybe I can do my own executive order and shut things down for a couple of days.
Please. I mean, it would be nice. I don't know if I can stay sane here. All right, go ahead.
I don't know how to swing this from that to this, because this is a fairly serious question, and I apologize for changing the tone, but there is a, you know, the one thing that the state of Massachusetts has done is that they've released many prisoners. I believe I've seen the numbers sway from over 600 to over 1,000. And because of obviously the compassionate part of it. And originally when I heard that the prisoners could be released, I thought it was going to be mostly nonviolent crimes. But there have been some violent prisoners who have been released by the states. As a matter of fact, guys like Glenn Christie, Matthew Paris, one is a convicted pedophile and a child rapist. And then there's some other prisoners who have been released from Massachusetts prisons. What was the standard to get these people released? And did you agree with that happening?
No, I mean, that was something that the Supreme Court of Massachusetts ruled on. And my concern with any of that, even now or later or back when they did it, was there was no real, there's no plan when these folks got released. There was no real plan on how to handle it. And generally what happens is when you're let out of prison, there's a plan, or like, it's almost like a plan when you're released out of the hospital. There's a plan around you, and we have some services in Boston, and other places have services as well. When I say services, trying to come up with how do we reenter somebody back into society. I don't know. We don't I'm looking now with the police commissioner, with the uptick that we've seen in shootings in the last few weeks here in Boston. Well, we're trying to see if there's a direct correlation, but you can assume there is. And you know, listen, I feel bad for anyone that is dealing with the coronavirus. But I think that if you're letting out somebody out of prison that's a nonviolent offender, that's a lot different than letting somebody out who's a violent offender. And the violent offender, you know, unless the proper procedures are in place, or even sometimes when there is, there's a good chance that some of these folks could reoffend again. And we want to make sure, I want to make sure that we don't have more violence in the city of Boston. We're dealing with enough. And another issue that doesn't get talked about a lot is that a lot of these people get released out of jail, and they're in other parts of the Commonwealth, and they end up getting sent to Boston because we have a homeless shelter, homeless program. And our homeless program right now is at capacity in the sense of we're trying to help the folks that are there now. So when we get new people involved there, there's a whole process that's an issue. So when they started letting people out, I certainly had major concerns about it. I know my police commission has major concerns about it. And my concern is for the health and safety of the residents of Boston. Our police department does a really good job along with our street worker program. But some of these folks are coming back. They don't have anything to come back to. There's no jobs. There's no reentry programs. And that's a major concern.
Are they being monitored, the violent criminals?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I don't know how many people. Some people might have been released to bracelets. They're supposed to check in and things like that. But I'm not. I don't have the answer to that question.
Okay,
that's more on the state side. You know, I have zero say in that, except for an opinion. I don't have any ability to say anything there.
But that makes Mayor Walsh, but that's something you obviously do not agree with, correct?
No, I mean, I think if you have somebody that's seriously ill and you're concerned about that person, that's a nonviolent person, I think that's a whole different category of conversation to have. But I think when you have somebody that has gun charges or sexual assault against kids or people or rape, and they have a sentence to pay, they got sentenced for a reason. And I feel that they should be finishing out their sentence. I don't believe this should be compassionate release. Now, if somebody is extremely sick and they're potentially, you know, they're at risk of dying because of the virus, that's a, that might be a different conversation, but I don't agree with letting out somebody who's committed violent crimes against people. You know, there's just not something I would agree with.
All right, Mira Walsh, I know you got to get out of here in a couple of minutes, but the federal government seems to be a little odd. And now, how much is that affecting what's going on at a local level?
I think in the beginning it affected. The problem that I see with the federal government is that their messaging is inconsistent. You know, 2 days ago, the federal government talked about that in June we're going to see potentially up to 200,000 cases per day of coronavirus and 3,000 deaths in America. And if that's the case, then the federal government's role should be working with states on how do you protect people from losing their life and stopping the spread of the virus. Yesterday, the president's talking about reopening the economy. Now, clearly, we all want to reopen the economy, but we want to do it in a way that's going to be thoughtful and that's going to be safe for people so that we can put in, like I said a minute ago, maybe it wasn't clear, but when we reopen our economy here in Massachusetts, we need to reopen it, obviously, at some point. And then when we reopen it, if there's a second surge, if there's a way for us to keep the economy open because we have procedures and practices in place that can trace and track people and test people, then we don't have to have a full shutdown. The federal government every day has a different message, and they're not consistent. Talking about dismantling the task force for the coronavirus, well, I have no understanding why that would even be a thought right now, because you're in the middle of the coronavirus conversation. You're not at the end of it. You're not almost at the end of it. You're at the very middle of it. This really started in February, and we're in May now, and for the foreseeable 3 or 4 months, we're still going to be in the midst of this conversation. So I think the inconsistency is very dangerous. And that's why when I said about myself and the governor and other mayors and town managers in Massachusetts, I think people want this. They want consistency, and they want us to be on the same page with the same message. And I think that having two different messages doesn't help the average person realize, like, what's going on here. They want to see leadership, and they want to see consistency. And that's what we have to continue to provide here in Massachusetts.
Mayor Walsh, I know you got to get out of here, but I do appreciate you.
When's sports coming back?
No, he knows.
I can't wait. I mean, he knows. The thing that kills me about this year is that, I mean, it kills me every year, but we have the Bruins in first place.
I know.
We have the Celtics are 2 games out of, or 3 games out, whatever they're out of. They're near the top of the East. There's a good chance that if we have playoffs, the Bruins could take a long run in the playoffs, and the Celtics could take a long run in the playoffs. And I'm interested to see, like, just the Red Sox. I mean, I know we lost Mookie and Sales down, but, I mean, the Red Sox still have a pretty decent, framework here.
For anything. They don't know what it is.
Let's talk about the new ones.
You're playing to your constituents. You're playing to your constituents. The Red Sox are
at least on the last
one,
do
anything.
We'll go with you on the Bruins.
You know?
I'm with you on the Bruins.
Sam Kennedy's a good guy. I'm trying to give him a shout-out here, you know?
Well, listen, we don't all have friends in high places. We're not all mover shakers, headline makers. Well, Mayor Walsh, I expect never to get a ticket in Boston due to our relationship. We do appreciate your time. I know you got to get out of here, but thank you so much. So the 18th, not guaranteed the opening. No, I'm not kidding. But an announcement on the 18th about the plan is what I'm understanding.
Yeah, the plan will be the biggest focal point that day, but I'm sure the governor's going to be working on some other things, too. We've had some conversations, and he's talking to other mayors and town managers around the state. So I'm sure that the governor will have a lot to say in that day, maybe even prior to that day.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor Walsh. We do appreciate it, and thank you for keeping us all in the loop.
Tell your family we say hello from Boston.
All right. Well, yeah, when I'm in Tennessee, and then I got to come back early because you guys are, going crazy. All right. Thank you so much, Mayor Walsh. We
talk
do appreciate
to you later.
It. All right. Take it easy. There you go. Mayor Walsh. And now you can all tweet us about how we weren't tough enough on him. Because that's the show. All right. Well, I didn't know that these molesters were out and about.
Yeah,
I don't care for.
I couldn't in good conscience not ask him about
no,
that.
I don't care. No, it's a good question. I don't care for child. You know what, Rich? As far as I know, I am no fan of the child molester. I would prefer they were not out and about. I would like them to serve their sentence. But
yeah, that is something that it's. I mean, it's the courts. It's the state courts. And he's right. And apparently the police, like, they're pissed. Because these
aren't. I would imagine.
There's some guys out there that are bad dudes. Like, when you see some of the stuff that they've done, and that there's no, it doesn't seem to be a ton of monitoring on them right now. And they're obviously pissed.
Well, I'd rather have a murderer out than a child molester. I would much rather have someone who has murdered someone out than a child molester. A child molester is the truly the scum of the earth. But on that note, comedy on the way. We will have that for you in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.